Live from the American Gulf Coast, it's the Dave Nemo Show.
It certainly is, and as promised, Bridget Blitch is joining us now for Protecting Your Livelihood. It's a series that we're doing with Bridget. She is a partner at Taylor & Associates Attorneys at Law over in Florida. And today, we're going to talk about something that we never really talk about very much. And that is taking a passenger, bringing a rider along on a commercial motor vehicle trip. How complicated is it? Wait till you find out. Bridget's going to start off with a real actual case study and kind of use that as a basis for the discussion. But we'll be talking about the law. We'll be talking about all of the forms that you need to fill out and what the responsibilities are of actually kind of like the three people involved, the truck driver, the company owner, and yes, even the passenger has some responsibilities here. But Bridget is very responsible, and she is going to walk us through the hoops, I guess you might say, and some of them are flaming when you think about it, about taking a passenger in a commercial motor vehicle. And we'll get to protecting your livelihood with Bridget Blitch in just a moment. You bought a truck so you could have control over your business, but in reality, you rely on brokers, and that costs you a lot of money while you waste time tracking down loads and payment. Load Express changes all that. You deal with the shipper directly. You take back control. Load Express matches you with freight from qualified shippers and guarantees fast payment, and it's free. The shipper pays, not you. LoadExpress.com. It's time for you to try a new way to move freight. Deal direct. No brokers. LoadExpress.com.
If you could put hundreds of truckers back to work, if you could make one truck driver's pile of bills less daunting, if you could give a woman who delivers goods to your table one less worry, wouldn't you? Every year, thousands of truck drivers lose their jobs, homes, and more when a medical problem causes financial hardships. But with your donation to the St. Christopher Fund, you can help get them and their families back on the road. Donate today at truckersfund.org.
Well, let's get on board and get strapped in for a ride in the passenger seat this morning on the Dave Nemo Show. And Bridget Blitch is with us. Hey, Bridget, good morning.
Good morning, Dave. How are you doing this morning?
Doing great. Doing absolutely great. Been looking forward to this discussion because it's a lot more complicated than a lot of people would understand, I think.
Yeah, it is. And it's one of those, you know, I always like to engage our audience and get them thinking about something that maybe they haven't thought about before. And I can certainly tell you in my practice, this comes up quite a bit. And it's a good segue from our previous shows where we've talked about why we want a dash cam. It's a parallel, right? If something happens to the passenger, there's going to be that same tendency to favor the citizen passenger, just as if there was an accident. So I want to just kind of engage our audience this morning on some of the issues that I come across and the stories that I hear in cases I handle involving passengers.
Wow, absolutely. And that is a very interesting parallel. And again, something that you really don't think about. We kind of take it for granted that if two vehicles are involved in a crash and the officer comes up, if it's a car and a big truck, the car driver's going to get the preferential treatment there. That's just the way it is. But you don't think that that might also be the case with that poor innocent passenger sitting next to you in that truck. Now, you're going to kind of set the stage here with a real case.
Yes. Yes, so this is a reported case, and I've changed some of the names here. But I want to set the stage for what, and this is parallel to other cases that I handle. So the backstory is last year, while en route for a hopeful transport, our driver, Harold Donner, met the plaintiff, who becomes our passenger, at a truck stop in Houston, Texas. The plaintiff asks him for a ride, and Harold consents, notwithstanding the fact that Hopeful Transport has a written policy that says, sorry, no passengers allowed on the truck. The plaintiff did not have a particular destination in mind and just decided to ride with Harold for several weeks. On November 22, 2016, Harold was driving the truck on a mountain highway near Elkins, West Virginia, when he lost control of the truck and went down the side of the mountain. Both Harold and the plaintiff were injured. The plaintiff, who was 24 years old at the time, was rendered a quadriplegic, although at this time she has since regained the use of some of her arms. So there's a couple issues that we have here. One, of course, is that the motor carrier has a policy that says you can't have any passengers. And that brings up the issue of the federal regulation, that there's a law governing motor carriers and drivers regarding unauthorized passengers. And that's in 49 CFR 392.60. The other component to this is the motor carrier did have that policy in place, but the driver violated that policy and in turn also violated the statute by carrying that passenger on the truck with him without that written authorization. The other issue that comes up is what type of insurance was there on that truck that would have covered or covers the passenger in the event of this injury? And we're going to talk about that a little bit. And then the other question is, well, what could Harold or Hopeful have done to either prevent that situation from happening or mitigate their liability exposure with respect to the claims that now the passenger is bringing? So that's kind of my roadmap for this morning's discussion, is going through the law, going through what really was the proper procedure that should have been followed by Harold and by the driver, and then what should the driver and the motor carrier look for when passengers are going to be permitted, and what qualifications really should we consider before we allow a passenger on the vehicle, both the qualifications of the driver and the passenger themselves. And then if we do decide to make that decision to bring the passenger on, we want to make sure, particularly oftentimes we have family members riding in the trucks. God forbid something happens there. What kind of insurance can we get to protect that individual? And recall, just because you have insurance doesn't mean that that prevents the passenger from bringing a claim. So what then releases of liability are effective to protect the driver and the motor carrier in the event of a claim?
No, thanks. I think I'll just walk.
Well, you know, there are some really difficult moral decisions, unfortunately, that drivers are faced with when it comes to passengers. And the drivers want to, or think that they're doing the right thing by bringing a passenger onto the truck because maybe that person has put themselves in a compromised position, right? They've jeopardized mm-hmm. their own safety, and the truck driver sees that, and they want to pull that person out of that dangerous situation, right?
That almost sounds like it could be. I don't want to read into something here, but the scenario that you gave us kind of made me think of that very thing.
Right, right. So in this case, what if it was the plaintiff what if she was homeless and had children with her and they didn't have any place to go? It happens all too often. And, you know, it could be something as, you know, instead of the plaintiff just deciding to ride with the driver, what if the driver wants to bring that family back to another family member and they're going in that same direction? So they bring the mom and they bring the kids onto the truck and they take the family home where they need to be and out of the elements, so to speak, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a tough decision, right? But you have to look at that, again, this is a profession, and what's the right thing to do, right? That once the driver takes on that responsibility, the driver exposes him or herself to liability and exposes company to liability, whereas maybe the proper step would be to engage law enforcement to get that family out of that compromised situation and not take that responsibility on, right?
Indeed.
So so let me just kind of go through a little, you know, the foundation here, and that's the law. So what does the law say? So the law says that unless specifically authorized in writing to do so by the motor carrier, under whose authority the commercial motor vehicle is being operated, no driver shall transport any person or permit any person to be transported on any commercial motor vehicle other than a bus, right? So if you have a written authorization, you're in taking a step in the right direction now that you've got that permission to carry the passenger. But keep in mind, just because you have that permission doesn't mean that there's going to be that safety net, that is, that the insurance behind it, or that that passenger can't claim a right to insurance in the event that they get injured on the equipment. So there's an important process then that needs to happen, a dialogue between the driver and the motor carrier company if they do allow a passenger to be on the equipment. And one of the things that the regulation says, well, you know, this doesn't apply to employees or persons assigned to a commercial motor vehicle by the carrier. So a mechanic, for example, or the driver that's operating the equipment, or if you're team driving, for example, that situation, the authorization wouldn't be applicable. But, Dave, I've got another one for you, if you have a minute.
Oh, we have a minute.
So what if you have a company that is interested in bringing on a driver, and this prospective driver says, you know, I want to see if I like trucking and this profession fits with my goals. And so this individual comes on to the truck, and they ride along with a driver. And the driver goes and takes on a shipment. They're traveling along. They reach their destination. And at destination, the passenger says, hey, you know, let me help you get angled in here to the dock. And so the driver starts positioning the truck, backing it up, doesn't see the passenger, but assumes the passenger is clear of the motor vehicle. And unfortunately, what happens is that passenger is not where he's supposed to be, is directly behind the truck, and gets crushed by the truck. Survives, but makes a claim against the driver and the motor carrier. And the question becomes, well, was there negligence? Well, certainly there could be an issue of contributory negligence on the passenger getting behind the vehicle, knowing that the driver was backing up. But what about the issue of insurance? We know that both the driver and their family are going to want to get recourse for those injuries. This person's never going to be able to work again. Certainly, they're not going to be able to drive a truck, if, you know, let alone manage day-to-day functions. So they make a claim against the motor carrier, and then the insurance company, who typically is it's going to be your auto liability carrier, is going to step up and say, "But wait a minute, this person, were they actually an employee, or were they a third-party passenger? Because Dave, you want to take a guess what the implications are if that person's considered that passenger's considered an employee?
If the passenger is considered an employee, then the insurance should cover that person, right? Wrong?
Wrong.
Ooh.
The insurance company is going to say workers' compensation is your exclusive remedy. That policy, let's say it's $1 million auto policy, is going to say we don't have any duty to defend or indemnify you, driver or motor carrier, because this is a work comp issue. This is not a liability issue.
Never thought about work comp. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why when we go back to, do we have the right policies and procedures? Are we documenting everything correctly? That's why that's so important, because then we can show to the insurance company, no, this was an authorized passenger. Well, the auto policy, the passenger is going to get covered under the liability policy if they're a passenger. But if they're an employee, these auto policies have an exclusion that they're not going to cover the employees. I mean, that would be true the same of the drivers. Of course, we handle those cases where the drivers or the estate go ahead and sue the motor carrier anyway, and then it becomes a battle of, is workers' compensation the exclusive remedy under that scenario?
So the employee is covered under the law because no written authorization is needed and all of that. So you're good in one case, but then you're really leaving yourself vulnerable in terms of the insurance. Does that happen enough to where people just – is that a fairly common – I mean, let's hope it's not common where a guy is behind a trailer and gets crushed, but people – accidents happen all the time. So do companies are they generally unaware – of the fine line between insurance coverage and work comp obligations when it comes to employees out there on the road with the drivers?
You know, so companies, they all vary, right? And what we try to do is do everything to set them up to mitigate their risk exposures. And this is one of them, right? Making sure that they have a program in place if they permit passengers, so they have the authorization form that they're vetting their driver, they're vetting their passenger, and then that they're securing a release of liability in the event of an accident. So, and when we go through a company's operations and we look at all the potential risk exposures, there's so much, as we know, Dave, that goes into a trucking company to remember everything. And something like this where they think, oh, this will be a good opportunity to bring on another driver. We'll just put him in the truck and he can ride along. And they don't think of the collateral consequence of what happens if the passenger gets hurt.
Yeah.
Now the company is exposed and could potentially shut its doors, right? There's no insurance there behind them.
Wow.
So it's significant. And even then, if you take all the right steps, the questions become, what if that liability, release of liability, isn't effective? And one of the things we'll talk about here this morning, if we have time, is can motor carrier companies and drivers secure a release of liability from the passengers? And what type of passengers are we bringing onto our trucks? Certainly have handled situations where we're bringing children onto the truck, we're bringing people who have illness onto the truck. So anytime we're bringing somebody else onto that equipment, there is the potential for a liability exposure. And we do our due diligence by securing a release of liability, but we have to also identify what is the effectiveness of that release.
Wow. Well, there's a lot to talk about, and I know that you really enjoy taking calls, too. So why don't we grab a quick phone call right here, Bridget. Bridget Blitch is with us from, well, she's a partner at Taylor & Associates out of Florida. And we do a series with Bridget once a month called Protecting Your Livelihood. And we're getting into the passenger seat this morning. So K-Bar is with us up in Iowa, Bridget Kabar. Good morning, and you're on with Bridget Blitch now.
Good morning, Dave. Good morning, Bridget.
Good morning, Kabar.
Hey, this passenger thing happens to be a little bit of a passion of mine. I have argued with truck drivers for 25 years about whether they could have somebody in their truck or not, and they're putting their own livelihood on the line when they do it. I just happen to have a copy of my company's passenger authorization form and application for passenger accident coverage. And I thought I'd read the section I thought was, it's not very big, but there's one section which is pretty much in legalese, but I thought it was an important section to put out there. It's the section that the passenger signs. And it says, by my signature, I hereby release, acquit, and forever discharge said company, their agent and representative, and all other persons of any claim, demands, and damage of any kind, known or unknown, resulting in personal injury, death, or property damage arising from an accident or incident while an occupant in any vehicle owned or under contract from said company.
Bridget Kabar just pretty much led us right into where you were heading.
Well, Kabar, thank you for that, and I'm with you there. This is such an important issue, and one thing I have to say about these releases is that they're going to be governed by state law. So each state is going to have their own set of authority as to the effectiveness of the liability, right? So in some circumstances, for example, the question is, in Florida, there's a four-part test. Is the waiver clear? Is the waiver unambiguous? Is the waiver unequivocal? And is the waiver broad enough and specific enough to limit liability? And this is assuming that we are asking an adult that has all their faculties to sign this waiver, right? So basically what it's saying is that the language has to be clear enough that the person signing it can understand what their rights are, all right? And that the waiver has basically on no certain terms that they're waiving their right to sue in the case of an injury, that there's not any loopholes, the unequivocal part, right, regarding a waiver of rights. And does the waiver actually state what claims the waiver is signing? For example, is the signer waiving regular negligence claims versus gross negligence claims? And there's, I can give you examples of how that applies, but that's basically the test in Florida. So each state is going to be different, but as a best practice, we want to get those types of waivers that comply with the state law that's going to apply to that operation is going to apply to you to make sure that that's effective in the event of an accident.
I always have at least one. So let me give you today's dumb question, Bridget. Let's let's say your company is domiciled in Florida, but something happens in Iowa. Does Iowa have anything to say about this? In other words, does it matter where you are or just where you come from?
Well, that's not a dumb question, Dave. That's a really good legal question. Right?
What?
Yes, no, you, and I think that's a great question because oftentimes the issue, and this is one that the issue that gets litigated frequently in contract issues, right, is what law applies. Where was the contract entered into? So I will take the assumption, I'll make a factual assumption that the company is headquartered, principally located in Florida, that the operations manager goes through, qualifies the driver, qualifies the passenger, they come into the office and they sign the waiver in Florida. Our argument is that the contract was executed, that is, that waiver was executed in Florida, therefore Florida law applies.
Got it. Okay. And you just hit the clock right on the nose. So we will take a break here for news and weather. And we'll be back on the other side with a lot more paperwork to take care of when it comes to carrying a passenger in a CMV. Bridget Blitch is a partner at Taylor & Associates in Florida. And this is Protecting Your Livelihood.
To the Dave Nemo Show.
And let's get right back to our conversation with Bridget Blitch from Taylor & Associates over in Florida. And speaking of being from Florida, you'll be from Florida for a couple of days at least later on this month, because we get a chance to have a cup of coffee together, I hope, at the Great American Trucking Show. You're going to be over at the Dallas show. We're really excited about that, Bridget.
Yes, so am I. I'm looking forward to it, and the timing worked out perfect, so I'm looking forward to meeting everyone there, and it'll be a great time.
It certainly will be. It'll be a great time. I know you've been at the Women in Trucking events. Have you been to one of the actual truck shows?
I have not, so this will be a great opportunity for me to meet everybody.
Well, you know, it's great. August.
I was going to say, they unlocked my door and they're letting me out of the office. So.
Well, it's Dallas in August, but it's all indoors. And you're going to bring your camera. You're going to really enjoy all of the show and shine trucks there. They have a wonderful, wonderful display of some really incredible working trucks there at the show. The folks from Truckers Against Trafficking will be there, the St. Christopher Fund, you name it. And I know everybody's going to be really excited to meet you. So we'll see you in just about 2 or 3 weeks. But back to the questions at hand here. Why don't we take another call here? Because Ed is with us up in Minnesota with a very interesting question. And I guess when it comes to passengers, we are all individuals, and it almost seems as if every case is an individual case in a sense. I mean, there are some blanket parameters, if you will, but then it kind of just boils down to the actual trip that the truck is taking, the driver, him or herself, who the passenger is and why they're on the truck. And yeah, it really becomes individualized, it seems to me.
Well, it is, and that's one of the things that the authorization form has to state is when does that authorization begin and when does it expire, and you know, what are the points of origin and points of destination, or is it just from terminal back to return to terminal for a certain period of time so that it just recycles over during that period of time. So the truck may be going out on continuous dispatch, but that authorization continues to be in effect until that authority expires.
Well, it's almost like the human in that jump seat has a bill of lading attached to them, just like the cargo in the trailer. Well, that's almost a kind of a setup, I think, for Ed's call. He's up in Minnesota, and Ed, good morning. Welcome to the program, and you're on with Bridget now.
Hey, good morning, Bridget.
Good morning.
My question is, good morning. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. My question is, I own my own company. I got my own authority. I drive my own truck, and my wife is a co-owner of the truck, my company. And I want to know why I need all that Mickey Mouse stuff, just if she wants to ride with me or if I want to take her with me wherever I go.
Yeah, so I think that's a great question, and we have to look at what the regulation is. And it's the exception is that no written authorization is required for employees or other persons assigned to the commercial motor vehicle, right? So if your wife is considered an employee or another person assigned to the company, one of the arguments might be, well, an authorization is not required for her because she's an extension of the motor carrier company, right? And part of this, too, is, you know, what does your insurance require, right? Does your insurance require that you have an authorization in order to make sure that she's covered in the event of an accident? Because that's what we care about here. We care about protecting our families and protecting our businesses. And so that's, if we have to fill out a form, we do it because we're protecting each other and we're protecting what you've built up, because you worked really hard to get that truck and to get that authority, and we want to make sure you stay on the road. So the rationale behind these forms is that we protect our livelihoods, right? And so it may be that your wife may not need an authorization form. I don't know all the specifics, and we'd be happy to talk to you in more detail, but maybe that isn't something that statutorily we need for her, or maybe it is something that we need for another reason, just to protect our corporation and to make sure that we don't jeopardize coverage.
Okay.
And so it may be that your wife may not need an authorization.
Okay. Well, Ed, thank you for the call. And Bridget, thank you very much. Now, let's continue on here. There is a checklist for the passengers to basically, well, I guess it's everybody's responsibility. But, you know, I made a statement earlier on, and I want to make sure it was accurate. I said there are kind of like three entities involved here. You have the driver, you have the company, and then you have the passenger, and all three have some responsibilities. Is responsibility the right word, in a sense, for the passenger?
Well, I think that that's a fair statement, right? Because if let's say the company and the driver make this decision to have a passenger, and we're going to allow that authorization, get those forms in place, one of the things we want to make sure of is that that passenger is going to be safe in the truck. Right, so we don't want that passenger to operate the commercial motor vehicle or do something that could compromise their safety. So what we'll develop is a set of basically an agreement to go along with the release, that you understand that there are inherent risks that are involved when operating or being on a commercial motor vehicle, and that as a condition of this authority that we're allowing you to be on the equipment, you understand that you can't do the following, right? So in that, mm-hmm. to that extent, yes, there are responsibilities of the passenger to make sure that they comply with the company's regulations in terms of being safe while on that truck.
When it comes to the driver, I'm just going to kind of say it this way, and I think you'll know where we're heading here. We'll just call it the 30-day rule, right? And you know where I'm going there.
Mm-hmm.
In terms,
so one of it's going to be a company decision, right? As to how soon does the company want to allow a driver, assuming they're an employee driver, be qualified and allow a passenger on the equipment. And part of, like, when I say vet the driver is, and the company may have a standard of no moving violations within the last 30 days, or DOT reportable accidents, something that reflects that this driver is not yet ready to take on the responsibility of a passenger, right? Because that's a big responsibility. It's a big responsibility just to operate a commercial motor vehicle. Now you've added the dynamics of another person onto that equipment. And when it comes to making a tough decision and saying, no, you can't, you know, you have to be safe, is the driver ready to take on that responsibility. So it's a very important consideration before we allow, or as a company makes a business decision to allow a passenger onto their equipment.
If someone, okay, and so that, but those that, and I'm calling it the 30-day rule because, you know, it has to do with moving violations, reportable accidents, or even with having someone with the company for at least 30 days, those are company-imposed qualifications. That's not part of the law.
Right. So it's the motor carrier that has the ability to give the authorization. Right. And so what the regulation states is that when such authorization is issued, it shall state the name of the person to be transported, the points where the transportation is to begin and end, and the date on which that authority expires.
Got it. Okay. Now, we're going to go back to the phones. And our next caller is Eric out in Washington State. And Eric, thank you for calling our longest distance call so far this morning. And you're on with Bridget Blitch.
Hi, Bridget.
Hey, Eric. Good morning.
For you. Good morning. I had a quick question for you concerning the passengers. Now, my question is with the passengers, if passenger has their own CDL, would they be allowed to ride along with the driver
without any paperwork, you mean?
Well, no, not necessarily without any paperwork, with the signatures and the waivers and so on. But would they be allowed to be with the company, or not company, but with the driver?
So, Eric, that's a great question, and that ties into exactly one of the scenarios, cases, that type of cases we handle, where a driver who has a CDL comes onto the equipment, and they may be interested in working for the company, and something happens, and that person gets hurt, and the question becomes, are they an employee or are they a third-party passenger, right? So some companies actually in their policies say we will not allow a passenger who has a CDL to be on the equipment. And that's going to be at the discretion of the company. I mean, in terms of the regulations, the regulations give the motor carrier the discretion on whose authority they will allow, right? The passenger to be present, but there needs to be a good procedure in place. So questions like that, just because that passenger has a CDL doesn't mean that they're permitted on the truck, and it certainly doesn't mean that they're permitted to actually operate the equipment as well.
Okay. All right. Well, that pretty much answered my question. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, Eric. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you so much, Eric. Bridget, one of the things about passengers is that they have to be pre-approved by the carrier in writing. You have to have proof of identification, social security card, driver's license, that sort of thing. And then, of course, for children, you know, you need all of that too. But does Homeland Security play into this in any specific way that you know of in terms of who's on these trucks along with that driver? Is that part and parcel of some of those requirements?
You know, Dave, I have not come across that. That doesn't mean that may not be something that they're looking into, and I can certainly get back to you on that.
Yeah, it just popped into my head. That was the popped into my head question of the day. Let's pop out to Montana instead and talk to Barry. Barry, good morning.
Good morning, sir. I'd like to make a comment about the passenger thing. I've been out here driving since 1959, and I have many times stopped to pick up passengers that were broke down or in climate weather, and they're not dressed properly and need to get in or they get warm. And this should not be a government thing. This is between me and the insurance. If I've got seat belts and a cargo net to put the kids behind, then I should be perfectly legal. I own the truck. I am the company. I am the driver. Get the government out of this damn thing and let the insurance work it out with me. That's my comment. Thank you very much.
Barry, thank you very much. Any follow-up on that, Bridget?
Yeah, Barry. And, you know, and that's one of the... This is a difficult part, right, about bringing on passengers and the moral piece to this. And there is a provision in the, and I'm sorry, I'm a lawyer, so I go back to the law, but there is a provision in this unauthorized passenger regulation that says there's an exception that no written authorization shall be necessary for the transportation of any person transported when aid is being rendered in case of an accident or other emergency, right? So the question becomes, is this an accident? An accident is defined as those DOT reportable accidents, or is this an emergency? I mean, is somebody's life in jeopardy such that you could say, look, this person was going to die, right? If nothing happened. So that is in the regulations, and it's up to the company and the driver to be working with each other to address that situation with qualified counsel when it arises.
And to Barry's point, and, you know, the government doesn't need me to defend them by any means, but when you take these laws and things and you just kind of take a look at the top layer, it looks one way. But you made a point in your opening statement about moral decisions that have to be made, and you kind of hinted at this. But Barry is absolutely fine, and he is law-abiding when it comes to transporting somebody after an accident or in some type of emergency to get them to a safe haven. So the law is not a heartless law by any means.
Right. So emergency is defined, and it can mean any number of things in terms of catastrophic weather or anything that threatens human life or public welfare. Right. So if I'm the attorney defending Barry or defending any driver that has taken on that responsibility, I'm going to look to the law and I'm going to say we were in compliance with the statute because we fell under that exception.
Understood. Now, that being said, let's see what Milkman has to say up in Indiana. Milkman, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Milkman.
Morning. I may have stumbled across a little gray area in all of this. Maybe not. I don't know. But I'm a company driver, and if I take the truck home on a weekend and say my kids are helping me gather up my laundry or clean the inside of the truck, whatever the case may be, and one of them somehow gets hurt. Maybe they fall out of the truck, fall off the truck, getting in or getting out or something. What happens in that case? Because I don't have a passenger policy, but are they really a passenger if the vehicle is parked for the weekend and we're just kind of doing my housekeeping, house cleaning kind of thing? What happens in that case?
Yeah, so I guess the question becomes, you're not under dispatch, right? So the insurance, and I think this comes to a question of insurance, right, is there coverage there to help relieve you and your family in the event that something happens? And you'd have to look at that auto liability policy. And some of the situations that I've encountered, and this is not in context with your case, but where an accident occurs and it's not under dispatch, is there an exclusion such that the insurance company will say, well, there's no coverage there because you weren't under dispatch or it wasn't a scheduled vehicle at the time. And so that, you know, that becomes a question really of what do you have as a security in the event something happens there. And that can, if we have a few minutes, leads me to what types of insurance are there for passengers, right? And how can you, what can you do to make sure that if something happens, that there's at least some coverage there for your passenger?
I was just kind of curious, because I mean, I'm not one of those people that turn around and try to sue the company if like I said, the truck's parked in my driveway and one of my kids is helping me gather up my laundry or something, I look at it as personal responsibility. It's my, I'm responsible for him. It comes in on my own private health insurance, but I was just wondering what the legalities of that were, you know what I mean?
Sure. No, and it's an important question that we encounter whether it's a family member or some other person that comes into contact with that equipment and an injury happens, whether they're an authorized passenger or not. The question becomes, who's liable? Was there negligence on the part of the driver? Was there negligence on the part of the company? Was there negligence on the part of the passenger? Right.
Well, Milkman, thank you very much. That was, I think, maybe the interesting question of the morning. Not that everybody has not had interesting questions. And we do have some time for you to walk us through some of the insurance coverages that you want to make sure that you have. And before you kind of run into that, are these coverages that you have on a blanket scale, or are they for limited? Can you get a limited time? Like if you're going to have kids out for a month during the summer, can you get a month-long type coverage with certain companies? Occupational accident coverage is one thing, and then you'll need endorsements called authorized passenger accident coverage endorsements. And we do have a little time, so I'd love for you to walk through some of that, Bridget.
Yeah, so let me just touch on the occupational accident coverage. That's a policy that we encounter often in our industry, and where it's utilized is with independent contractors coming on, leasing on to the authority of a motor carrier, and it allows for certain occupational accident benefits and non-occupational accident benefits to trigger in the event of an accident. And one of the provisions in those policies can provide for passengers, certain benefits for passengers. So I like the occupational accident policy because if you're an independent contractor, you're not, and I'll say it depends on state law whether the actual motor carrier company is required to maintain workers' compensation, right? There are those states that say, regardless of whether or not you are an independent contractor or an employee, we require you, company, to have workers' compensation. And then there are other states that recognize occupational accident benefits. And this isn't, we call it the OCAC policy. So oftentimes what will happen is the motor carrier company will say, as a condition of us leasing onto your authority, we require you to have this occupational accident policy. And it will be a program that the contractor can participate in that will give them benefits in the event of an accident. And it can also cover the passenger in the event of an accident. And so it's there, right, to protect both if it's a husband and wife team or a family team, that, or whatever the case may be, that if it's an authorized passenger, it's got the authorized passenger form. You have to make sure, obviously, you're complying with the terms of the policy to make sure that coverage is issued in the event of claim. Now, that being said, that doesn't mean that now this occupational accident policy is your exclusive insurance, right, remedy. Just because you have the occupational accident policy doesn't mean that that passenger can't go out and still sue the motor carrier company or try to get benefits under the auto liability policy. So there, but it is there as a best practice, right, to make sure that you have coverage for your passenger. And it's also good when you're an independent contractor in the event that the company doesn't have workers' compensation, they can pursue the occupational accident benefits under that OCAC policy. So that's an important coverage form. A lot of folks are not aware of it, as I encounter through my practice, so I just make sure to inform the audience of that. There are, and as I mentioned also, the other component to this is the auto liability policy. So there were some policies that excluded passengers, and that's going to be on a case-by-case specific issue, which is like you said, well, then you have to make sure and talk to your agent, your retail insurance agent, to make sure that you have an endorsement on your policy that covers passengers. And so insurance is an important question, right? Because we just maybe make the assumption that we bring somebody on and we go through the proper procedures, that means that either the AUGAC policy or the auto liability policy that's tied to that truck is going to issue coverage in the event of an accident. And so, of course, in the law, we never make those assumptions, and we want to make sure we review those policy terms and conditions, and we talk to our retail agents to make sure that we get all the coverage that we need to, so that in the event of an accident, that passenger is covered. And so it's an important feature that I wanted to share.
Whoa, wow. Once again, an info-packed segment here this morning. Bridget, thank you so much as always. Bridget Blitch, partner at Taylor & Associates. Bridget, we'll see you in just a few weeks at the Great America Trucking Show over in Dallas. News and weather coming up next. This is Dave Nemo.